Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.
Welcome back to the Dog Pod, the original podcast covering the undefeated, fifth-ranked, Pac-12 leading, game day hosting Washington Huskies tackle football team. I'm with Mitch. I'm with Law Dog. Hey, last week it was the 115th meeting of Oregon and Washington football, the only time in the history of this rivalry we've both been undefeated and top 10, 7.4 million households watched this thing on ABC. What was ultimately, as we talked about, the most critical, greatest matchup in all of this history, and the Dogs come out on top 34-31. Look, there is so much to get into, and just like the team, after that, we're going to turn the page over to the Sun Devils of Arizona State. But first, let's get into this thing. Gentlemen, I think we got to start out with the beginning of the day. Game day was in town.
Yeah, but BT, you said that there was a football game this weekend in town.
You know, the sun parted. It was rainy the night before. The sun's parted. Game day was here. What'd you guys think who went to game day?
I mean, I thought people were just showing up to see Jess Sims at Red Square at 6 a.m. Game day was awesome. All joking aside, great energy down there. It was really, really fun. Me and my buddy, we took our daughters. They were just stoked in terms of the signs, the atmosphere. You know, I think, I think it was just great. Like all the articles that you see that really reference the Dog fans turning out, they were loud, guys. My favorite part is when Dan Lanning was interviewed, and during the questions, the crowd was quiet. And then whenever he would answer and respond, he was just a super loud crowd drowning him out. Great experience. And the Dog fans really showed up for it.
Oh, the students were there the night before. Incredible. Hey, finally, who hits the field goal? We should have kind of known this, the $30,000 field goal. And I don't know if you noticed this, a member of Sigma Phi Epsilon fraternity hits the field goal, gets the $30,000 check. I mean, it was the start of such a great day. I was out there. I thought Joel McHale was hilarious. I thought he did such a great job. Comes out in the gold and purple body paint. Was super good. You know, I mean, people talk, there was a little bit of grumbling, like, oh, he was here last time. But I don't know. One person I would like to say next time, if we get this again, and I know she was busy winning yet another championship, I'd love to see Kelsey Plum out there making picks one of these days. But game day was killer, and the Dogs showed up. And I think, look, you know, this is the first time that we've had the whole crew that was out here. Corso's out here. They're out there. I mean, just absolute great energy. And how much love from Pat McAfee towards Dog Nation. It was great. It was great. Loved it. Loved it.
You know, one quibble with Pat McAfee, it's just he makes it all about him. And it's just kind of like it gets a little annoying. I just am not kind of a hot takes like guy watching the like talking heads on sports, you know, TV stuff. Mm-hmm. But so I'm not into it. But he has clearly his shtick. And I think he loved the fact that he thought he was going to get rained on by Coug fans, and he loved the fact that UW embraced him, and I think it made him even more kind of celebrate the moment than he was expecting to.
Oh, and you forget how much of a national following this guy has. Like, I got a couple of texts from people in the East Coast like, "Hey, I was watching McAfee, and boy, he had on the." And I was like, "Wait, what? The Mackie?" Like, you know, they're out. Just that is what they're doing. They're at lunch. We're going to watch the McAfee show, and he had the hooded sweatshirt that Coach got him. But it was great. And then look, everybody makes that walk down from Red Square past Suzalo, past Drumheller Fountain, down to the tailgate. Get there, you know. Showed my son got down to the boat a little bit to the party in the pig tailgate, and then we get in early. That's the earliest I've ever been in my seats. We were in there an hour before. Super fun. They're throwing footballs into the stands. I threw a football to my son. My 10-year-old caught it, sent it back. Everyone's all the students right next to the student section are all cheering for him. And then who comes by? Mario Bailey. And I got the Mario Bailey shirt on. Mario comes over here. He goes, oh, look at that shirt. You know, I mean, it's just like the days just getting, but then, hey, one thing I will say at the early time, think back. I'll say this before we get started. I look back up in the stands, and I remember a lot of the times, particularly during the dull years, you know, the Willingham, early Sark years, etc. And boy, it seemed like there was 20%, 25%, a third Duck fans. And this time, sprinkles, they're there, but Husky Nation showed up. And they booked up the price of those tickets so much because the game was sold out that it wasn't like every Tom, Dick, and Harry from, you know, there was an Oregon fan showing up. So they were there and they were loud from the get-go. Students were there. But should we get into a little bit of the game?
I did talk to a few of those Duck fans after the game, BT. They weren't doing a lot of talking back to me, I would say, but I kind of let them know where I was coming from there. Yeah, this was one for the ages, guys. By the standards of these two teams, it actually got off to a bit of a slow start. McMillan with the false start on the opening drive. Huskies go four and out, followed by a three and out from Oregon. But on the second possession, Penix sees the Ducks jump off sides.
Now, here's a free play for Penix, and he'll just launch downfield. 50-50 ball. Odunze's got it. Wrestle down to the 26, making the use of that free play. He beat Jaleel Florence.
It's a tough battle to the field.
Beautiful catch.
Odunze is as good as there is. The chemistry that he has.
And it doesn't take long to get Giles Jackson back from injury involved here.
Ooh, Giles, here we go, baby.
Now, here's a free play for Penix, and he'll just launch downfield. 50-50 ball. Odunze's got it. Wrestle down to the 26, making the use of that free play. He beat Jaleel Florence.
It's a tough battle to the field. Odunze is as good as there is. The chemistry that he has.
It didn't take Giles Jackson too long either to get involved after coming back from injury.
Jalen Polk in motion. Penix pump fake and now launches a dart down to the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Giles Jackson joins the party. And this is the Washington offense these fans came to see. 26-yard TD strike.
Just a beauty. No one was talking about it all week.
One-on-one with outside leverage. Look at the outside leverage by the corner.
And Jackson just kind of coming off the bench and coming out of nowhere, right? Huskies lead at 7-0, but the Ducks come back and actually take an 8-7 lead here with the tight end little run play on the two-pointer. But the Huskies come right back again. Penix is marching the Huskies down the field, first to Polk, then Dylan Johnson. A couple receptions by Jackson move the ball to Oregon 26.
Final minute of this first quarter. Pressure picked up again. Launching for the end zone. Caught. Touchdown. Jalen Polk.
JP.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it was clicking early on for these guys, right? Oregon actually comes back and reclaims the lead, guys. Nick's touchdown pass to Patrick Herbert, the lesser Herbert. It was 15-14 Ducks early in the second. Penix getting Rome much more involved here now with three catches for 38 yards moving down the field. But the Huskies are also feeding Johnson. Had a really nice day here. After he grabbed a catch to bring the ball down to the Oregon 12, the Huskies went right back to him.
Johnson has it, tries to get to the edge, and he will score diving to the purple pay dirt.
Big day for DJ.
And then they go back and
just like this.
Yeah,
Brandon tack Harris on.
Looked like he may have had a chance there, just too much speed.
That's right.
Then they go back and tack on the two-pointer, get that point back from the first quarter, and that makes it 22-15 Washington. Oregon gets it back here now, and a Jabbar Muhammad pass interference penalty move the Ducks into field goal range at the Husky 31.
He's fresh. He's back in the game. They fake it to him. He picks up the blitz for a time, but then Lulofoscio got him. Eddie Lulofoscio from the linebacker position.
Lulofoscio is right here. You talked about it, Chris. The pressure that they're trying to bring.
What a day Eddie had.
Bo Nix has been running the football quite a bit. Not a great effort from Bucky Irving. Who
just awesome.
The Ducks went on to tack on a field goal here, but even after that sack, but these teams just couldn't go quietly into halftime, guys. The Huskies are up 22-18 with just 2 minutes to go. They have a very interesting fourth and one from their own 46 with just 1:25 left in the half. I was like, what is going on? Why are you going for it here? Rather than punt, they miraculously convert this fourth down with a shoestring diving catch from Jack Westover, keeping
great.
The drive alive, right? Looks like they were going to build on their lead, but Penix ended up getting sacked on the next play, and then it looks like maybe a miscommunication with Romo Dunze of some kind there. He throws an interception, the only turnover of the game at midfield, just 55 seconds to go in the half. But Dan Lanning, guys, he's got a Lanning. He just has to Lanning. He cannot take free points. He has to cough it. He has to cough it back up and all the way down at the Husky 3-yard line here. He elects to go for it on fourth down. Nix's pass falls incomplete. The Huskies somehow go into the locker room leading 22-18. And we knew the Ducks were starting the ball in the second with the ball in the second half. The defense forces an early three and out. Then Penix takes over, moves the ball down to the Ducks 17-yard line.
Kind of sliding to a different position here as Penix lost for the end zone. Jump ball caught. Touchdown, Odunze.
How many times are we hearing that?
And the Huskies stretch the lead.
God, what a day yet.
Now leading.
A lot of sirens.
A lot of air raids going on. Huskies now leading 29-18. But Lanning, he's got to Lanning some more. With 3:30 left in the third quarter, Ducks drive it down to the 8-yard line, and Nix cannot connect with Troy Franklin. So the Huskies get it back on their own 8. With 18 minutes left in this game, they're up by 11, guys. Mm-hmm. But the Oregon defense stands Paul. They forced consecutive three and outs, and the Ducks capitalized. Ugh. First, it was a touchdown to Franklin to make it 29-26 after another two-pointer. Then the Ducks take the lead after another long pass to Franklin, sets up Jordan James for a touchdown to make it 33-29 Oregon. And this is the most part, the frustrating part of the entire game here. Huskies with four chances from the 1-yard line to go take the lead here. Cannot get it in. They turn it over on down. So the Ducks have the ball with a 4-point lead and just 6.5 minutes to play. But Lanning, he just has to Lanning. He must Lanning. So despite chewing up 4.5 minutes of clock, moving the ball into Husky territory, the Ducks have one more crucial 4th-and-3 with just over 2 minutes left. If Nix could connect on this one, the game would essentially been over. But Lanning must Lanning, and Nix must Nix. The defense gets the stop. The Huskies get the ball back with 1:49 to play.
Penix backpedals, goes right downfield into traffic. It's Polk with a leaping catch at the 16.
Watch this safety right here. Just a little bit late in reacting, Evan Williams. Just enough
catch
for him to sneak that in as Williams got over late.
And Penix absolutely threw it into double coverage there.
Oh, completely. Completely.
But Polk comes down with it, and then after that catch, the Huskies need to chew some clock, don't they, BT?
You would think, but hey, next play, they're ready.
Launching for the end zone. Forget being patient. Odunze!
Forget being patient.
And Washington takes the lead. My goodness, what a 1-2 punch from Penix.
Here, he's there to protect against a threat into the corner. Here, Evan Williams, all the action goes right. He takes a couple steps to his left, and that's just a quarterback trusting one of the best.
Post-game, Rome saying, I'm open. Give me the nod. I'm going to route whatever route I want to go, and here you go.
But the Ducks had 1:38 left to get into field goal range and play for the tie, or if they wanted to go the length of the field, go for the win. But there's a reason Penix is Penix and Nix is Nix, guys. Nix goes 6-for-6 coming down the field here, but just moving the ball 38 yards, getting the ball down the Husky 25 with just 17 seconds left. I thought for sure they would take a couple of quick shots at the end zone. But even at this point in the game, Nix is not really trying to force the ball down the field. He fires incomplete on first down, incomplete on second down. With 4 seconds left, Dan Lanning realizes, oh, I have a field goal kicker on this team, don't I? Oh, yeah, there he is. Get him out there. Let's send him out this thing to tie it up.
On the season, he's 6-for-7 coming into today, and he made one earlier as well. This from 42. Good snap, good hold. Kick is on the way. Kick is up. End over end kick. Yeah! He's thrown. Good. He missed it. He missed it wide right. He missed it.
It's so good.
Damn, I don't believe
pandemonium.
It's pandemonium at Husky Stadium. You're not keeping him off the
Students
field.
Students rush
here.
The field. Huskies win it.
36, Oregon 33 in a classic.
Amazing.
Second straight win over the Ducks, guys. 4th in the last 7 games and the 62nd beatdown in this century-old rivalry. The Dawgs win it. Possibly the greatest victory in the history of Husky Stadium. My voice is still recovering.
Oh, my gosh.
I think so is Castor Cone's.
Castor Cone may, it may still be. I mean, what a day. And I mean, such a kind of roller coaster of emotions where, you know, you're in great shape. You got a real nice double digit lead and feeling pretty good. And then, you know, of course, this is a great, like got to give him kudos, man. I mean, first of all, like I'll say, Bucky Irving, what a running back. Holy smokes. I don't ever want to see that guy get him. How many times we think not only have him down, you got a corner wrapped his ankle up and you still can't get him down. He's driving. I mean, what, and you know, and look, Troy Franklin, I hate to say it, you know, is a guy we're targeting, target as well. Burned us. I mean, you know, just absolutely great. And I think the O-line and the D-line really took their lumps. But going from, I will tell you, when finally they, you know, Oregon takes the lead and I'm there, you know, there with my 10-year-old and he goes, Dad, Oregon's ahead. You know, he's getting really worried. And I go, and I had to, you know, say, hey, it's okay. Don't worry. You know, hey, win or lose, we support the team. Don't worry about it. At the very end, you know, we're row one, right? So we're in the corner and all the students start piling up right behind us in the aisles. And I tell him, hey, look, all right, we're going to have to move. If he misses this field goal, we got to get out of the way because we're going to get mobbed. Mm-hmm. And he goes, they can't run on the field. There's a guy standing there with a sign that says, like, no one allowed on the field. He goes, they can't do that. They're going to get in trouble. I go, like, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what they say. They're going on the field. So, like, I'm ready just to get it. Like, I, you know, pick them up. And, hey, they miss. We're jumping up and down. You know, I'm hugging my son. We're getting out of the way. Students are piling over to us. And, it's chaos. Everyone's going over the edge. And then all of a sudden he stops. He looks at me and goes, Dad, we got to go on the field. We got to run on the field. I was like, heck yeah, we do, boy. Threw him over the fence, jumped over the fence and like went around and found, high five and everybody that we saw and ran into, you know, one of the players that I've gotten to know, Drew Fowler, one of the linebackers. And hey, come over here. So I remembered my son's name after like meeting him once and coaching him in flag football and come over and goes, hey, Ari, you know, he sits down and then you know, he pulls his gloves off, gives my son his gloves.
And then, wow,
so cool, you know. And then, you know, go get the teammates. So we take off, and then he leaves, and then Ari goes, he forgot his gloves. You know, we got to give him his gloves. I go, no, those are yours. I get to keep these gloves. Like, yeah, dude, those are your gloves, man. And it was just, I mean, what an absolutely amazing victory. And I think it's just because the stakes were so high. This is when you wanted to win. Last year of the Pac-12, the only time in the Pac-12 these teams are both going to be ranked in the top 10. And the way that they did it, the way that this team came together, you know, we're going to talk about this, but Mike Penix, stomach cramps. He's getting an IV, ripping an IV out to run back on the field and finish the game. Giles Jackson, who we weren't even talking about, stepping in because Jalen McMillan re-injures a right knee on like the first or second play of the game. And he ended up having the game of his life. I mean, it was just all around incredible. Wow.
I mean, there's so many memories that are going to come from that game, right? Like, similar story, was there with my daughter. We went down on the field. I have these great pictures of her scaling the wall to get down onto the field. It's just so great, so cool. You know, and it's interesting. I think the team actually learned a bunch from that game as well, right? Like, you know, you start unpacking that, you know, Penix with his cramps, you know, wanting to quarterback sneak it. When we got stoned on Oregon's, you know, kind of like 1 yard line. And then they had some busted up plays because I guess Jeremy Bernard came out. That ball was supposed to go to him on mm-hmm. one of those plays that looked awkward and weird. Right. And so I think they got hopefully some nuggets that come out of this that then they can start putting in place for the future. The other thing that, you know, I noticed was MJ Holly had like pretty great game, you guys. I rewatched mm-hmm. the fourth quarter. He stoned Bucky Irving and that, you know, their other running back who was pretty impressive as well. So, like, I think they picked their spots and they showed up. And just what a great all up win. Polk, one last thing. Jalen Polk, holy cow, guys. Like, he's fantastic. Like, to throw to double coverage and he comes down with balls consistently, like the level of trust that Penix has with these guys is absolutely incredible. It's unreal.
And we're so lucky we have him and you have Giles Jackson, because if you didn't with Jalen McMillan out, everyone's just going to double roam and you have no other weapons out there, and having that is just absolutely unreal. What a day.
Yeah, no. And I mean, this is what we do to teams. with since Kalen DeBoer has been on board, right, is we chuck it and we out leverage you, sending three different guys to the sideline at three different depths and just all the schematic stuff that they do to just put pressure on that defense and pressure every part of the field. It's just, and when you've got Penix who can chuck it and throw it hard and he's got the arm strength to do it, we have just been carving up defenses. And, you know, it's 2 years in a row against the Ducks. DeBoer never lost against, never lost the Ducks, never lost at Husky Stadium. So enjoy this stretch while we're in it.
Unreal. And you talked about him being Lanny. I will tell you this. I'm so glad we have a coach who's an adult.
Yeah, he went for the one fourth down, right? And I a couple of those, especially at the end of the first half, I went to the bathroom and just, I can't watch. I was finding myself more relaxed if I was listening to the radio going on in the men's room than I was watching those plays because it was just too tense. I mean, I was grinding my teeth all day on Saturday, and my point where by the second half my jaw was like sore. I was just so nervous. So, you know, but DeBoer, give him a lot of credit, right? Is that we were much better at executing in the big moments on that one. And Lanning, you know, it's tough because it's 2 years in a row that he has really coughed up the game on fourth down. And I mean, if they take those points at the end of the first quarter or first half, I thought that was so foolish. You know, here we just gave you the ball at midfield. Like, here's three free points. Just take them. Just take them. But he has to just be so selfish and so aggressive. And I think it really came back to bite them. And for us, you know, you see the other side of the coin. It's much more of an adult, like you said, BT.
And, you know, one last point on that, Law Dog, is I read an article in Oregon Live, which is now the Oregonian, you know, it's replaced that. But anyways, this columnist basically called him on it and was, you know, commenting about now how his aggressiveness is becoming more into the reckless category, and it affected the Beaver game outcome. Now two Husky games in a row. And apparently Phil Knight was on the sideline and was not very pleased about some of these decisions that
Lanning I have something
making.
To say. That's awesome.
Well, he paid a lot of money, so I'm sure he probably will get to say them. But in the end, they just gave him an extension. So, here's the thing. Their strategy is to hire somebody who's young, dynamic recruiter. And Cruton. That's SCO Ducks and Cruton. That's their strategy. And they had, what, 14 out of 21 guys from their really heralded recruiting class from 2 years ago transfer. So if you're going to be doing that and just constantly churning out, you know, four and five star guys, you know, I don't think it's a stretch to say that your players are not going to have the poise of guys like Michael Penix, who's a fifth year senior, who's got a lot of familiarity with an offense. Roma Dunze, you know, guys who have a lot of experience and seasoned, you know, poised veteran college football players, which is what the Huskies have.
It's tough. And like Nick still has to get the bugaboo off his back where he's never beaten a top 10 team on the road. You know, never won a big road game. He's got to get that off his back at some point.
And not only that, but everyone's talking about the rematch, right? There's going to be a rematch.
Oh, I got thoughts.
Well, right. Yeah. You know what? I mean, we have some margin for error to get through this Pac-12 season. The Ducks really don't at this point. I mean, we know what happened last year. We were having a three or four way tie with two losses. And it came down to some stupid, you know, percentage against common opponents or whatever. And so I think for Oregon to just assume that if they, you know, that they can just cruise to the championship is a big mistake.
The common, trash talk I heard, it was one another thing my 10-year-old said, because we had you know, a couple Duck fans behind us, or just one guy loud and swearing the entire game, and then my son turns to me, these Duck fans are horrible. I'm like, yep, like, welcome to my world,
welcome to life.
When we're leaving, you know, I heard from two different fans when we're leaving, you know, and I'm like, you know, they're like talking trash to me on the way out and back to the car, which is like, you're super tough talking trash. I'm literally holding hands with my 10-year-old son. You think I'm going to say something to you? You know, and then they go, hey, see you in Vegas, man. See you in Vegas. I'm thinking to myself, like, what, like, will we? Because sure, like, we'll on talent, there. these are the top 10 teams, but this is not the old Pac-12 with two teams and a bunch of garbage. there are two teams undefeated in conference play. You're not one of them.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. There are three one-loss teams. You're one of those. There are two, in my opinion, dangerous two-loss teams. This, like, if I was, if someone was going to take, give me the field, I'll take the field.
Ducks, yeah. I would take the field.
I'll take the field. And this is, they're the second best team on paper. Yes, they're like, they passed the eye test and they should win out. They should be favored in every game that they play, but I'll take the field. So it's going to be
a lot. The Beavers got them last year. Utah has, I don't know if I'm looking at their schedule right now. Do they play Utah? They play Utah in 2 weeks. Utah. Has had their absolutely had their number over the last couple seasons. They're going to have a tough game against the Cougs next week. I'm not saying they're not going to win that one, but then they got SC and then the Civil War. I mean, it's not an easy road to sweep that schedule.
No, I don't think it. I don't think it is. It's this is not a given. This is also not week 10 where you have like 1 or 2 weeks left. You got a lot of football to play, and the same thing for us as well. Like you got a lot, you know, you got a lot of football for us to play against a really tough schedule that we're going to get into.
Fortunately, again, we have the two worst teams in the conference.
We do back to back, and even after watching last week, I think there's still some distance between the two of these. But hey, last thoughts. I'm just going to say, you know, let's put a cap on this thing and turn on to the next game, which is exactly what the team is going to be doing right now. But what an incredible day for Seattle sports! What an incredible day for Husky Nation to go out and enjoy that, and for these student athletes and how much fun they had, and they're going to have this for the rest of their lives. That was the one thing, you know, the student athlete mentees that I have. The three that I text with, the thing I wrote them was like at the end, you know, gave them some time and said, you guys are going to have this for the rest of your life. No one can ever take this memory away from you. Like you always will have this.
I mentioned this on an earlier episode, my 11th birthday. And I took three friends to the 1990. All I saw was purple game and Todd Marinovich. And that was a nutso game. The crowd was incredible. And we were shutting out SC, who had been to the Rose Bowl 4 consecutive years. And we were absolutely curb stomping them in Husky Stadium. And that was electric. I was at the 92 Nebraska game when Tommy Smith knocked the Nebraska quarterback out of the back of the end zone. They set the decibel record. I was there for, you know, some huge games. That Stanford game 7 years ago was huge, you know. And this is right up there. Maybe at the top. I mean, it was just an incredible game from start to finish, incredible atmosphere. I mean, we were celebrating and partying like I've never done in Husky Stadium. I mean, it was a celebration.
All right, big game against Arizona State coming up. But before we get into this thing, look, this is our last time that we're going to play Arizona State as conference foes. And who knows, we might not see these guys for a decade or two, even non-conference. So let's take a trip back in the old time machine. Educate me a little bit on the Arizona State Sun Devils.
Yeah, I wanted to get into this one because this is just such an interesting story, right? The 1970s when the Arizona State and the Arizona schools were brought into the conference. This was a much different time, much different college football era than the one we are living in today. Mm-hmm. The expansion that brought the Arizona schools in the conference in 1977 had literally nothing to do with television contracts or market size. It was really the old familiar issue that's caused the fractures in the Pac-8, though, at that time to consider expansion at all. It was USC's revenue sharing complaints. So in the 1970s, the Pac-8 shared their television revenue, sure. But they also, more importantly, they had to share that gate receipts and gate revenue 50-50 with the opposing team. Ooh. So I know it's so Pac-12-y to do this, right? But when USC filled the Coliseum in 90,000 against Wazoo, they sent half the proceeds to Pullman. And when Wazoo filled Martin Stadium with 30,000 against them, they sent half of the proceeds to Heritage Hall, right? So the system obviously created a lot of resentment with USC. And USC President John Hubbard began to explore the idea of adding more schools that had larger stadiums as a way to increase those gate receipts. He reached out to Arizona President John Schaefer, very receptive to the idea. He had just opened a medical school in Tucson, and he liked the idea of rubbing elbows with the men of Stanford and Cal, BT. It was too irresistible. He had to pursue it, right? But the dynamic in Arizona was a lot different than you might think, because they share that one board of regents. along with actually also Northern Arizona University. Okay. But Schaefer was unsure if he would be able to do it without ASU. And ASU at that time was the king of the WAC. They had won the WAC 7 of 9 seasons, right? Wow. And they had even finished in the top 10 in the AP poll 4 times between 1970 and 1975. Squad. They went undefeated in 1970 and were invited to the Peach Bowl and beat North Carolina. Woo. It was their first bowl game in 20 years. But Cush, Frank Cush, their legendary coach, said, with the Pac-8, they need us. We don't need them. So that was the ASU attitude at the time, right? And the reason that that came about was that it had a lot to do with the Fiesta Bowl. After the Peach Bowl in 1970, the WAC, that in particular ASU, was very frustrated about their lack of bowl game opportunities. So they came up with and created the Fiesta Bowl in 1971. They played it at ASU's home stadium. It was one of just 12 bowl games at that time. So it was able to attract top-tier opponents that either didn't win their conference or maybe they didn't have a conference tie-in like the Big Eight. So plus there were a lot of independents at that time, you got to remember. So sure. Penn State, Florida State, Notre Dame, Pitt, West Virginia, all those teams played in the Fiesta Bowl at one time as independents. By 1981, the game was being played on New Year's Day, and in 1986, the nation's top two teams, Miami and Penn State, accepted invitations setting up a de facto national championship bowl game in the Fiesta Bowl of 1986. So the Fiesta Bowl was really this burgeoning giant of bowl games, right? And ASU had been playing in it, right? They had won it 4 times in the first 5 Fiesta Bowls, culminating in 1975, which a lot of people say is the greatest ASU team of all time. Mm-hmm. In 1975, the Devils go 12-0, including a win over Washington in Tempe to open the season. And then they end up beating Nebraska, who was number 6 in the country in that Fiesta Bowl. And because they were in the WAC, right, and even though it was ASU, Arizona, BYU, Utah, still wasn't a very well-respected conference. They got just a handful of first-place votes. They lost the national championship to Oklahoma, who was 10-1. They were the runner-up. But that success they had that season led to an expansion project for Sun Devil Stadium, bringing the capacity over 70,000. So this is very appealing to USC President John Hubbard, right? But there's a sizable vocal contingency of ASU stakeholders that did not want to give up their access to the Fiesta Bowl and this great exposure that they had gotten on these New Year's Day games. So, and actually, the sports editor of Arizona Republic, Vern Boatner, can't make these names up, BT, he came out and predicted that the WAC, that leaving the WAC would be a disaster and would leave the Fiesta Bowl in shambles. So that
didn't age well.
Yeah, it didn't age well. But by September 1976, ASU, it was unclear what they wanted to do. According to the Arizona Republic, there was a letter written by the ASU president saying, rejecting the Pac-8 invitation that was never sent. And there's a note on it that's paperclipped in the official archives. It says, President Schaefer did not want me to send this letter of being the U of A president. Arizona, though, was steadfast about wanting to join the Pac-8. They really were working behind the scenes. They built this report and wrote a report for the Arizona Board of Regents, with both schools shared, right, that had these rosy, optimistic financial projections about TV rights, bowl game revenue, increased ticket revenue, all this stuff. And so eventually that brings all of the Arizona stakeholders kind of on board at this point. And by September, the Pac-8 presidents are meeting and voting to continue expansion. Importantly, UW President John Hognes and Stanford President Richard Lyman were absent and sent proxies to this meeting in September, where they voted to continue expansion discussions. Over the next couple months, ASU comes around. Only recently, though, December of 1976, the official meeting to expand, only recently have the details of what happened in this meeting been revealed publicly. UCLA's retired assistant chancellor, John Sandbrook, wrote a letter, or an article, I should say, for John Wilner's Pac-12 hotline for the 40th anniversary in 2018, where he went into the details for the first time publicly. But he was the point person for the Pac-8 on this Arizona expansion, because the UCLA chancellor was the head of the executive committee at that time. And he revealed in this article that it was UW President Hognes and Stanford President Lyman, who were both absent at the September meeting, who spoke up at this December meeting officially to vote to expand, saying that they would not be voting for it due to academic concerns, BT.
Oh, gosh.
And according to the Arizona Daily
Star. Prowessness, if you will.
The prowessness. And according to the Arizona Daily Star, Hogness was quoting, this is the UW president, quoted as saying, I've consistently said that I'm opposed to the two Arizona schools joining the league, and I still feel that way. So USC President Hubbard, though, goes ballistic. He erupts and accuses Stanford and UW of double-crossing him after they had voted to allow expansion at the September meeting. Right. Hubbard threatened to go to the press, who was gathered outside the meeting, and announced that USC was leaving the Pac-8 if they did not change their votes.
That'll do it.
And, of course, USC, they were coming off four national titles in the previous 15 seasons. So we'll get to them in a future episode. But at this point, Stanford President Lyman leaves the room, phones the guy who he had sent to be his proxy at the September, confirmed he had voted, he had agreed to continue expansion. He comes back into the room and says, all right, fine. I'll honor that decision. I'll vote for it. And I'll leave Hogness, the UW president, to and I'm quoting from the Arizona Republic again here, to face castigation up and down the coast for refusing to allow the castigation. Hogness relents and makes it unanimous. They needed a unanimous vote to approve this expansion. They get all the votes, and the Arizona schools join after all that drama. In 1978, ASU finally joins the Pac-8, becomes the Pac-10, and they did so with a full head of steam. They finished 4-3 in their first season, 9 in the conference, 9-3 overall, and they finished in the final rankings behind Coach Kush. Kush was unexpectedly fired after that season for meddling in a university investigation over whether he had hit one of his own players. But ASU nevertheless finishes in the final rankings of a major poll five times in their first 10 years in the Pac-10, including their final Fiesta Bowl victory in 1982 over Oklahoma, and culminating with their one and only Rose Bowl win in 1986 behind Coach John Cooper, who would leave the next season after the next season for Ohio State. The Devils made it back to the Rose Bowl one more time, BT. You'll remember this one, 1996, Jake the Snake Plumber. Undefeated going into New Year's Day, win the Rose Bowl, and they would have been national champions, but they lost to their old ball coach, John Cooper. They finished number four in both polls. But if wishes were horses, then beggars would ride. ASU never would make it back to Pasadena again. And just this one for the annals, BT. ASU holds the lifetime 22-16 edge over the Huskies.
How dare you? Why would you bring that up when it gets
counted? I know. Wikipedia actually has it wrong, though. They miscounted a forfeited game in 1979. But ASU, one of just three Pac-12 schools to hold the advantage over UW, and they have won 13 of the last 15 in this series. And, I mean, it is going to be a burner on Saturday. I can't wait.
Ooh, okay. Hey, well, let's get into that. Big game coming. Let's talk about it coming up. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Amazing. Well, hey, we got to turn the stone, though, and get onto this next game. So let's get into it. Long week. We're halfway through the season. Here we go. This week, 7:30 on Fox Sports number one. It's your number five, UW, hosting 1-5 Arizona State. Arizona State has taken the last two. Let's call it what it is, man. 35-30 over then. Coach Bob Gregory, forgot about that. And of course, last year when they were coached by Shane Iguano. So this is the team, look, that has caused us problems, but we got to get into it. What are they bringing to the field? Let's talk about this ASU offense that's coming to town versus the Husky defense. Look, there's a reason this team has one win. Okay. They're last at the Pac-12, last in touchdowns, last in rushing yards, last in first downs, last in third down conversions, last in points, 18.7 per game. Nationally, 122nd in scoring offense, 113 in passing efficiency. I mean, last in the pack in rushing, 10th in fumbles lost. Okay. I mean, this team, 116th in the nation in terms of pass plays of 10 plus yards. They do not have a single run over 18 yards. This to me is a little weird because this is the hallmark of Kenny Dillingham offenses. Think back to Memphis, Auburn, Florida State, Oregon, you name it. Big play, right? Big, high impact, long down the field play, and he just cannot get it done. Now, these injuries this year are probably not going to help this week. They're missing their starting right guard, Joey Ramos. They're missing their left tackle, Brandon Waldron. They're missing their left guard, Sione Funau, who we know that name. Questionable. Junior guard, Ben Coleman, out for the season. Okay? Now, of course, we know Jaden Rashada. That's who we thought we were going to play. He's out for at least a couple more games. He's not going to play this week. Bring in Trent Borgeau, who led them out. And boy, we remember this guy from last year.
God.
Running the ball. I really liked Cameron Scadabo. We got him in Pac-12 fantasy from the Sacramento State transfer. He's a solid number nine in the Pac-12, 5 touchdowns on the season. He's good. You have to watch out. They have one weapon as a wide receiver, Elijah Badger. That is their number one receiving option. We got to watch out for that guy. I hate that this team had 2 weeks to prepare for our one. Yeah. They've been off for 2 weeks. Now, they played a close last-second loss in front of a sellout crowd at home, which is crazy. They sold that thing out to Colorado. And Kenny Dillingham had to have a big conference with the team to say, is this where you give up? You got to decide, Sun Devils. Do you give up on the season or do you double down? And we got to see what happens. Now, look, all those categories that I just said to you, this should be a field day for the defense, right? This should be. The line got all that they could handle last week. We really saw that. But I'd expect MJ Olatunji to beat up on that injured line, hopefully giving the way to some of the bench to play, Bandis and the others. The edges should finally get all those sacks we've been expecting. ZTF, Braylon Voigt, this should be the show. How about Sieko Fball? Best game I thought you had all season last week. Look, I think the 4-2-5 defense that we have is perfect for a team like this that has no ability to push the ball downfield. Think about those edges and the two-point alignment. They should have a field day pressuring. Given these lack of deep plays, Asa, Dom Hampton, they should all be able to cheat up a little bit as well, right? This should be, it should be a field day for this Husky defense against the Arizona State offense. But we're going to have to see who executes better and who keeps their head on straight against a team, again, who's had 2 weeks to prepare for this battle and get healthy.
Yeah, I mean, this would be letdown city, right? We would be looking for letdown city right here. If this team hadn't kind of ruined your entire season last year, right. And the fact that I think the coaches are going to be able to turn it up a notch and say, do not take these guys lightly. There's absolutely no reason they should be taken lightly in this game. And in fact, there's every reason to come out and put up 5-6 touchdowns in the first 5-6 possessions this game and put it away.
Yeah. And hey, really, if you're going to give one team coming off a bye a shot at you, I'll take this one. I would have said Stanford last week.
That's a great point, Mitch. That is a great point of everyone on the schedule. Because we've had that in years past where it's like, oh, Oregon's got 2 weeks and we have one. Yeah, you're right. You're right. If it has to happen this way, this is the week.
Yeah, no, I think this is a real test. This is the type of game where you really look to your coaching. And you just say, what kind of coaches do you have? And in the past, we've been able to take care of business in games like this. I will say ASU is kind of like the one exception to the rule in some of those cases, right? I know I was going to mention it a little bit later on, but that 2017 game that we lost down there 13-7, it was just like, what the hell was that? And there've been just a few of those over the years. So, I mean, fortunately in Seattle, they have not been that bad. But down there, as we know, we've had a lot of trouble and we'll get into it a little later.
And I'll say one last thing on that. I think that's a great point, Law Dog. It is the coaching. I agree with you, but that also comes from your senior leaders, right? Think of where Penix was last year. He was like the new guy and he earned the job. And, I think he was turning into the captain and the leader that he is now. And then like, take a look at Eddie on the defensive side, who's now back fully. I don't think those seniors are going to let a drop down happen. They are going to be just like another set of coaches on the field with the rest of the guys.
Yeah, Greg Lewis and Mario Bailey have talked about this on the Honks, where when that 1990, when the Huskies lost to UCLA, kind of an inexplicable loss to a 5-6 UCLA team that kind of screwed up their top five aspirations that year. And the seniors came in the following year and were like, this is not going to happen to us this season. And they've talked about that. And I think if I'm Penix, if I'm Rome, all the veterans that you've got on this team, it's the time to step up right now.
Mm-hmm. Even with the captain back there, Asa Turner coming back as well, played a bit this week and played quite well. And he's going to be your captain back there on the defensive side. Wow. Anything else you guys think about this ASU defense and what you want to see from our offense?
Oh, yeah. Oh, we're going to talk about the ASU defense. Let's do that a little bit. So, all right. If you take a look at them, yards allowed. I was looking at this in the breakdown. They averaged 339 yards allowed per game of defense. UW, by the way, is allowing 394. Now, something the Ducks game has a little bit to do with that. The numbers are now skewed. But passing yards allowed is 217 compared to the Huskies, 259. Rushing yards allowed 122 compared to the Huskies 135. My point on this is, on paper, the ASU defense is better than ours. But let's peel the onion a little bit. Let's get into the next level. All right. So their top two tacklers on the defense, Chris Edmonds and Shamari Simmons, both defensive backs, total 43 tackles and 36. We've been on teams before, guys. We've seen Husky teams where that's no bueno. You don't want your DBs to be the leading tacklers on your defense, right? The third leading tackler is Tate Romney, a linebacker, all right? He's got 30. And the next is finally a defensive lineman, Deshaun Mallory, who has 26. Another defensive lineman, Prince Dorva, who has 25, et cetera, et cetera. Their top linebacker, Travion Brown, who was a transfer from the Cougs, is out. It's looking like for this game, he was probably their best defensive player, right? And so basically, look, like, everyone in the second level is making, are your leading tacklers.
Wow. Oh,
you know, that is not a good sign. So, you know, the strength of this team is their secondary. So I think this is going to be another one of those interesting games to see, you know, is Penix and Grubb going to take what they're giving them? Do they get Dylan Johnson and the running backs going against this ASU defense to get into the second level and then do some big plays, open up maybe if some of those cornerbacks start coming up to do what they usually do to be the leading tacklers on this team? So it'll be interesting to see how Grubb, you know, plays this. My hope is, hey, look, it looks like our running backs are coming on, right? Dylan Johnson rushed for over 100 yards against the Ducks. Those are some tough yards, right? And so, you know, that's what it's going to be interesting to see. Do they go with the flow or do they really force and push some big plays downfield? I'm looking forward to seeing what they choose from. My hope personally is that they establish the run. This is the game where I think the Dogs really have a chance to establish the run, loosen things up a little bit, and then just blow things to the top.
Take some pressure off Penix. I mean, last year in this game, he had to throw 53 times. This was probably his worst game of the season last year. Was down there at in Tempe, maybe that UCLA game, but in either case, a lot of pressure on him last year just because he kept giving up points, whether it was that stupid pick six off the helmet or whatever, and Penix just had to just stand back there and chuck it. It'd be great if they could get the ball moving and take some pressure off him, especially if he's nursing any kind of an injury after last week.
Yikes. Well, hey, 7:30 kick, it's going to be a night game. We were just talking about this. If usually we have like a letdown, you know, of like I shouldn't say a letdown of a game, but like people stop coming, you know, you can get tickets for $10. And, you know, I'm buying some. I got some, you know, family coming in. My parents are coming and bringing my brother and sister-in-law into the game. And there are no $10 seats out there quite yet. I mean, people are going to show up to this thing. We did a head count for our tailgate. We're like 120. It's showing up, you know. And this has not been the case in your past. And I think it's just, you know, I mean, you know, how many conversations you have about people that know that you're the diehard Husky fan that are at work or whatever that just are like, oh, wow, I should come to a game, right? You know, I mean, this is, hey, fine. Fine. There's room on the bandwagon. Love to have you. We want you to be on Seattle's team and like keep it coming. I think this is great. All right. Should we get into the Pac-12 roundup a little bit?
Yes.
Let's do it. Okay, here we go. Last week, Friday night, it was 1-4 Stanford. Heading into Colorado, the Buffs were favored by 11. The Buffs blow a 29-point lead and lose in overtime to the Cardinal 46-43. Stanford avoids already the Ofer in the pack. So now it's only ASU who's trying to get that. Eric Iomanner goes for 294 yards and 3 TDs. An absolute moss over Travis Hunter, catching it behind his helmet. Amazing. And hey, look, I'm a Coach Prime fan. I love what's happening down there. Like, I think it's great. I loved the Saturday Night Live treatment that he got, though. If you haven't watched that clip, it is pretty darn good, man. Wild, wild game. Should we keep it running? Let's hear it. Saturday, Cal faced Utah. Utes were favored by 13.5, and they may have found their running back in what? Like safety, freaking safety, Sione McKee, 158 yards and 2 touchdowns. And so, and look, Barnes, you know, the quarterback, he benched after the Baylor game. He gets his third start. And look, He looked good. The offense pulled it together. Cal couldn't run the ball at all. 66 yards on the ground. Utes win big and Utes cover. Okay. How about Arizona?
Hold on a sec, BT. That is really interesting to me, right? If Utah starts kind of turning the corner offensively a little bit, and Cal has some good running backs, guys, like that was a really eye-opener game from my perspective.
It's a little scary where it's like you probably were lucky if you played Utah early on, and you may end up having been lucky if you played Arizona early on, because they are really, really yes. coming around. Yeah, I mean, you're totally right. I mean, you had like Jaden Nott, eight carries for 46 yards. I mean, that's a wild. Their second number rusher was the quarterback. You know, I mean, this is Utah's coming together. How about Arizona? We already talked about that. My goodness. Wildcats head to the Palouse. Cougs were favored by 8.5. Zona was 5-1 against the spread coming into it. Boy, they're 6-1 now, and they paid on the money line. Wildcats dominate 44-6. Noah Fifita, man. I don't know if he's healthy. He's not getting his job back after this, man. 342 yards. Wazoo couldn't stop the ground attack. 5 rushing touchdowns. And Wazoo, man, they can't run the ball. Cameron Warden doesn't look sharp. This was a tough loss in what they thought was a real surging Wazoo team. Tough one. Next one, a big one for the conference, 4:30 on NBC, USC and South Bend. Notre Dame was favored by 2.5. The Irish would dominate 48-20. Caleb Williams with a pair of picks, sacked 4 times, 5 total turnovers. Special teams suck. They give up a 99-yard kick return. I mean, just wow. SC is now 2-5 against the spread. And as most people are talking about, Caleb Williams may have played himself out of a back-to-back Heisman campaign. And maybe some of that is also because like the bar has to be so high to actually get that back-to-back. Man, one game have played himself out. Still undefeated in conference play, but they took that L. The old late game, guys. UCLA at Oregon State. Beavs favored by 4.5 in a real battle. Beavs win. Beavs cover. 36-24. DJ with 266 yards and a pair of TVs. They settled for 3 field goals, but it paid off. And the Beaver D stepped up with a pick 6. Beavs are in that mix against a real, real staunch UCLA defense. Really wild. Wow. Absolutely, man. What a freaking slate of games that went through. Law Dog, give us the standings. How are we doing here on the prognostication?
Well, it wasn't a good week for yours truly, and I'm just going to admit it. I do not know how to bet the Trojans. So whatever I say about the USC game, just take the other side of it. That's just the lesson to take away from this. But BT, you held on to your lead. You're at 22. I'm still holding in second, but Mitch also picked up some ground. He's 5 games back. So we're maybe inching a little bit closer as we get to the midpoint of the season here.
There we go. I love it. Hey, you got to make up some ground this week, and there's not going to be too many opportunities because this week just 4 games. Cal, Oregon State, CU, Arizona take the week off, but it's getting started early. How about another game on ABC for the whole nation to watch? ABC at 12:30. This will be on at the tailgate for sure. 4-2 Wazoo at number 9, 5-1 Oregon Ducks. Ducks favored by 20. Oregon with a 53-42-7 all-time record. Wazoo had their number for a bit. You remember, ripped off the 4 straight wins, 25-2018. Leach had their number, man. Vols convincing wins. Now Oregon has won the last 4. Including a close 44-41 win last year, if you remember that. How say you, gentlemen? Ducks favored by 20 at home.
Well, I went with the Cougs last week, and they totally hosed me. So I'm going to reverse course and go with the Ducks on this one on a revenge smackdown to the other Washington team. You know, if the Cougs couldn't stop the run last week against Arizona, good luck against those Oregon backs, right, is my perspective. And if Cam Ward is really starting to just kind of misfire, I mean, I'm not sure what, you know, the Coug offense can do against that Ducks defense. So give me the Ducks. I think it's big. It's probably too big, but I'm going Oregon on this one.
Yeah, I think this is a big revenge game for the Ducks. They're going to be pissed off and ready to hit somebody, and well, here come the Cougs. And you know, yes, they've played them tough in the past, but that's usually in Martin Stadium. Like last year's game down at Autzen's, a little different story. I'm taking Oregon.
And one last comment there, like, I feel so bad for the Cougs sometimes. Like, to your point, like a revenge game, the other team just got them. They walk into this hornet's nest while they're already kind of limping after a couple losses. Sorry, little bro, for warming that one up for you.
Oh, it just sucks. As a team, we're like, dude, you just beat Wisconsin at home. You've had, I mean, you just are rolling, right? It's still in the mix. And then here you go. Great. 12:30 day game. I hate to say it. This isn't going to help the records at all, but I'm with you guys. I think I see Oregon by 3 touchdowns or more at home. I think they win this one. Here we go. The next one on Big Fox. It's number 14, Utah, and number 18, USC. We got some great games this week. We'll all be watching this one. Trojans had their number, man. Over the history of time, Trojans have really had this. But Utah's first time ever winning in the Coliseum came in 2021. Can you believe that? They'd never won the Coliseum in 2021. And of course, last year, Utah with a comfortable 47-24 win in the Pac-12 championship. This year, USC is favored by 7 in the Coliseum.
And to Law Dog's point, the Trojans are hard to predict which version is going to show up. I think they're smarting from what happened at Notre Dame for sure, but they also kind of got exposed. And I think Utah's defense is always a stalwart. I kind of like Utah with those points. That's where I'm leaning.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate to. I'm just going to tell you, just take the other side of this. Take the other side of this, whatever I say, whatever comes out of my mouth here. But I am also.
Constanza.
I'm leaning towards Utah here as well. I just like them up front on both ends. And I think USC, that's kind of been their weakness. And, you know, we're seeing with the Trojans last year, their defense wasn't that great either. In fact, it was, you know, it was bad in quite a few cases, but they got a ton of turnovers. This year, that's kind of flipping around. And now Caleb Williams with the 3 picks against Notre Dame. Notre Dame barely had 200 yards of offense in that game. So, and smoked them. So I think Utah has got a good favorable matchup here, and I'm taking them with 7 points.
All right. So look, I hate to say, I was coming into this thinking this was going to be Utah for me because I just like the way that they're playing and I don't like the way the Trojans are playing. But I have learned in life to never trust my compatriot here, Law Dog, against the Trojans. And so I think, look, USC in the Coliseum, this has been a tough place for the Utes. And I'm thinking that maybe that was just an anomaly of a game that Utah had against Wazoo. And I think that maybe the big lights scare them a little bit. And I'll take USC here on this side. So I'll get the other side of that. The other late game, it's 4-2, number 25, UCLA at 2-4 at Stanford. The Cardinal ripped off 11 straight back in the day, but the Bruins have won 3 of the last 4, and most of those pretty comfortably, including a 38-13 win in Pasadena last year. Bruins favored on the road by 17.
I think that number's too big. I like this new Stanford quarterback and what they're doing. I think they got some mojo going. UCLA, let's see, you know, whether they can, you know, really have a consistent game on both sides of the ball. But like, I like Stanford plus 17. I think it's too many points.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, actually, Mitch. I wish I could diverge a little bit, but I just, you know, on the road, Stanford can be a little bit of a tough place to play. There's going to be about 80 people there. About 60 of them will be UCLA fans. And so I'm taking the Cardinal here.
Yeah, I hate to do this. We're going to be a boring couple of hosts here, but I just don't see it. That one really surprised me, actually. I thought it was too big of a line, particularly from what we saw, I think, last week and what we saw out of Stanford. I think they'll be able to keep this thing close and keep it under 10 to a single-digit win. And maybe pull off this. I hate to say it. Like, we'll talk about Stanford next week, one game at a time, but my goodness. We got that other one. I'm glad. I hate to say that after this big, big emotional roller coaster, I'm very glad we're hosting ASU this week and not traveling to Stanford.
Yeah.
So, hey, here we go. Again, Husky Nation, I hope you guys have enjoyed this. It has been such an incredible time. I mean, the people that I'm talking to have like, hey, this doesn't happen every year, you know. Like, I hate to say this. Look, let's be honest. This is an Ohio State and Alabama 4 or 5 stars every freaking year. You got an amazing set of coaches. You got an amazing offense. You got a defense that has, I mean, come so far since last year. Enjoy this one. Just enjoy it. Every week, and keep supporting this team and keep filling out those stands. Let's make every week in Husky Stadium sound like it did last week, because this was incredible.
Go Dawgs.
Nope.
Go
Dawgs. Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.